It's Grumpy Old Hangover as we discuss the geriatric comedy, Las Vegas.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
And this is Stuart Wellington.
And over here, Elliot Kalin.
And we are the Flophouse.
Yeah. So,
consisting of
Dan McCoy,
Elliot Kalin,
and Stuart Wellington as
the Flophouse.
In
the Flophouse.
Brought to you by
All Things Comedy and Shutterstock. Wait, no, not that. Squarespace.
Ignore that last part.
Wow.
Forget it. Forget it, guys.
The least professional podcast in podcastdom.
Okay. So
hopefully you fast forward a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So what do we do in this podcast, Dan? We watch a bad movie and then we talk about it.
Yeah,
let me just say that because you screw it up every time.
Let me just say.
We watch a podcast and then we talk about a movie.
We're taping this episode the day before my birthday.
Oh, wow.
That's right. That's right.
I don't see any presents. Anywhere.
Our presence is our presence.
I assume that they're still on order. So it's all right. You still have a day.
I got a shipping notification from adamandeve.com.
Thanks.
your subscription to Wife's Butts DVDs.
Is it something that you'll both enjoy?
Wait, me and you?
Yeah,
probably. Are we going to watch them together?
Yeah. Yep.
The joke that launched 1,000 short stories sent to us.
So, this is
Dan, if it counts, I haven't had a lot of time to get out of the house, but I've been making something for you out of the materials at hand, so I hope you enjoy the world's largest collection of baby poop.
Well, I mean, anything that gets me in the Guinness book.
He's a good eater, your son, huh?
Yes. He's an even better pooper.
Or is he one of those House of
if
Leaves
he's
house?
He's pooping more than he's eating, then yeah. That is a bad sign.
Well, right now the theory is that
conservation of matter would
somewhere in his intestine is a portal to the septic
tank elemental
in another
plane
universe.
Of turds, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Because a lot of pieces of metal, the kind
some
of stuff
sort
you see, the kind of stuff you saw in the Dianoga trash compactor scene
sure.
in Star Wars. There's a lot of that in his diet.
All the things
you're
you would feed a goat.
He's some sort of Iron Man.
Well, certainly his guts. Yeah.
But anyway, as you said, this is a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it. Tonight, we watched a movie called Las Vegas,
the sequel to
Las Vegas.
No,
penultimate
not.
Vegas.
This is
not a sequel, but it's kind of a ripoff of the Hangover movies.
And Sandlot.
I mean, in that it's about a bachelor party that occurs in Las
Vegas.
Yeah,
you take a little bit of the Sandlot, or Stand By Me, just mm-hmm. a little bit, age it a lot, throw a dash of Hangover in there, and a little bit of, Bucket List?
Yeah.
And you've got Las Vegas.
It's your basic grumpy old Vegas. And
that's a good one. That's a better title.
This is the second movie in the past four movies that features Robert De Niro in a comedic role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's got that going for it.
It does not have that going for it. That is not a... Although I will say this, and let's just get this right off the bat. Let's compliment mm-hmm. this movie.
Okay.
Let's say a nice thing. The four stars of this movie, Michael Douglas, Morgan Freeman, Robert De Niro, and Kevin Kline.
Hollywood royalty.
Hollywood royalty in that Michael Douglas is the Duke of Bel-Air.
Mm-hmm.
Morgan Freeman is the Viscount of Beverly Hills, let's say.
Okay. Sure.
Kevin Kline is,
the
of course, the King of Kong. And did I mention Robert De Niro is one of the Borgias.
As Shicky.
As himself. So they, aside from Michael Douglas, who I can take or leave...
At this point, I would more likely take or leave Robert De Niro.
I think Robert De Niro...
I'd take them both, man. They're great.
I say Kevin Kline and Morgan Freeman really charisma'd up the joint.
Yeah, they are the high points.
I will say that this is a funnier role for Robert De Niro than Grudge Match was, if only because he's not the energetic guy. He is the laconic guy, which is what he does normally anyway. He's not particularly good in it, but there are a few moments where it's like, oh, Robert De Niro just doing that Robert De Niro face he does where he's like, muh, muh, works for the moment.
It's me, Robert De Niro, muh.
But if this was just Kevin Kline and Morgan Freeman, better movie.
Yeah, no, they are pretty delightful in it, I gotta say. Well, for a movie that's not that very good.
They triumph over a movie that has almost no writing, and as Stuart, I think, said, barely is a movie. But it's more a series of vacation slides of Las Vegas.
It's a rough assemblage of scenes organized around the theme of old people in Las Vegas.
It does kind of feel like like Dennis Hopper's last movie type thing, where they sent a director to Las Vegas with these guys. They shot like 400 hours of footage and then disappeared. And the studio had to reclaim what was left and just cut a movie out of it. Mm-hmm. And there's just scenes that don't go anywhere, scenes that go on for too long, scenes that seem to stop in the midst of a joke.
Yeah.
And anytime a character laughs at something another character said, they're like, great, end the scene. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, get out on a laugh. I don't think that means when the characters are laughing. This is what the audience
laughs. Get out
laughs.
On a laugh, I said.
All right.
But should we talk about the plot?
It's yeah, not why not?
I mean, if you can.
So we're introduced to these. It's 1950-100, let's say, in Flatbush, Brooklyn.
Amber color.
And honestly, is there any reason for this movie to start out in the past? Like, having seen the whole movie
we have to realize that they were kids once.
It shows that these guys have been
and they
kids.
Didn't spring forth from some wrinkled womb.
Okay.
Wrinkled themselves like horrible raisin men.
Like California aside raisins?
Aside from that...
No, those are great raisin men, dude. Have some fucking respect.
That you're saying that old people are born from old women, is what you're saying?
Well, in this case, they could be. We don't know, but
if, like,
they
an
show
old woman
us.
Gave birth to a baby, it would come out old like a Benjamin Button.
Yeah.
They did not, old is a genetic trait.
You're saying they did not spring untimely from their mother's womb. It was like overtimely from their mother's womb.
Yeah, like if there's a movie about two mummies
untimely,
that
happened untimely. Ripped untimely from his mother's womb means that it was
a C-section. No,
not
I
that
get it.
She was old and he was old.
Just like how in Dead Alive the two zombies have a zombie baby. If two mm-hmm. mummies had a baby, it would be like, I don't know, Morgan dude. Freeman, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Mummy baby Morgan Freeman. Well, here's the thing. It's 1950, whatever. We're introduced to four friends, the Flatbush Four, they call themselves, and their personalities are already right there.
Mm-hmm.
Robert De Niro's character is sullen and punches people. Kevin Kline's character is a bit of a nerd. Michael Douglas's character is the fast-talking slickster, and Morgan Freeman is black. And those are their character dynamic personalities.
Sure.
A guy in a leather jacket threatens them or something, and they steal a bottle of scotch and punch him and run away.
Mm-hmm.
So these are hooligans. It's one of those things where, like,
it's a legend.
If you set a scene now in a movie and kids like stole a bottle of liquor and punched a guy, they'd be like, "Oh, these are bad kids." Yeah. But in the '50s, anything goes.
Forward 58 years, just like the Bratz movie.
Yeah, it's 58 years later. It's their sophomore year of high school. Things are not going well. They've been held back 50 times. But anyway, that's besides the point. Bratz and so forth. That joke I didn't work out. Let's keep moving, shall we? 58 years later, they all have their problems. Kevin Kline is living in Florida doing aquarobics. He feels old.
But he looks great.
He's in great shape. He does not need to do aquarobics.
Yeah, he's married to his wife, Joanna Gleason, who you may remember as
Jackie
Baker's
Gleason.
Wife from Into the Woods.
If you watched it on PBS or something.
Yeah, if you saw the great performances. She was also in West Wing.
They were good performances.
Okay. So,
she
was in West Wing as the baker's wife. Returning
yeah,
to
but
that character.
I mean, I'm just pointing out, you got your Kevin Kline, you got your Joanne Gleason's movie, Roger Bart shows up later.
Yeah,
so
a lot
it's
of
all
Broadway.
Of your Broadway stars.
A lot of Broadway stars, by which I mean three. But sure. So he's in Florida hating his life. Morgan Freeman lives with his son's family, hates his life, takes a lot of pills. It's medicine pills, though. Robert De Niro is basically...
He's not taking Molly?
Yeah,
is that what kids take?
Taking mothballs?
He's not a hophead. It's not like he's taking...
Bunch of lewds?
Uppers and downers and red bennies and, you know, things like that. Yeah. Morgan Freeman is not like, buying pills off some guy in the back of a movie theater or something. I got to keep the energy up so I can play with my grandkids. What do you got? You got to make me well, man. I got to get well. Anyway.
Plays with his grandkids takes on a different meaning when it's Morgan Freeman.
Boom.
Swish. Nothing but gross. Anyway, moving on. Robert De Niro is a widowed shut-in, and Michael Douglas is about to marry a woman one quarter his age, 31 years old.
I don't think that's one quarter his age.
He is at least 120 years old.
He's supposed to be 70. Come on.
I mean, he looks horrifying, right?
There's a part where he falls in a pool, and when he gets out, he looks like Solomon Grundy. Like, he just crawled out of a swamp. He's a half-decayed corpse. No offense to Michael Douglas. I really liked you in the Liberace movie. But you look like, you are like the Crypt Keeper, but with a tan.
Part of it's the costuming, right?
Yeah, he is wearing like a tuxedo and heavy makeup. So
I mean,
that's
the
Solomon
costuming
Grundy.
In that, like, his Michael Douglas's face is an old guy's with perfect bleached teeth.
Yeah, it's like Tom Savini style effects.
Yeah, yeah.
All of Tom Savini's zombies had beautiful.
His head is his head is filled with blood filled condoms, so it's gonna explode. Shoot!
That is the Tom Savini effect. So anyway, Michael Douglas realizes he proposes to his girlfriend while he's giving a eulogy at the funeral of a friend of his, and this is not a good eulogy.
Let's say non-traditional.
He's playing it for laughs. He starts telling the guy in the casket what a loser he was, basically. I'm not going to give up like you.
It's and the Comedy Central roast of the guy in the casket.
and he proposes.
Michael Douglas would be a good get for that.
Yeah.
Huge get. Oh, yeah. If he survived the ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, and on the spur of the moment.
I like the idea that there are all these, like, roast funerals, and just Lisa Lampanelli shows up for all of them.
Yeah, so this dead guy's here, hey, too bad he's not black, or Lisa Lampanelli can climb into the casket.
There are all these people in the audience, she doesn't even know the corpse.
That's not fair. A writer wrote that material. They don't know each other. That corpse had a real career. What does Tosh know about that corpse?
Anywho,
so in the middle of his eulogy, he proposes to his girlfriend. He tells his friends, except for Robert De Niro, because they had a falling out a year earlier. It seems Robert De Niro and Michael Douglas were both interested in the same girl when they were kids.
Mm-hmm.
Robert De Niro married her, and then she died a year ago, and Michael Douglas did not attend the funeral. I guess because he didn't have any roast jokes written for the occasion. Like, I just can't show up. They expect strong material from me, and I just don't have it right now. So they decide they're going to go on a bachelor weekend to where else but the Sin of Cities, the king of places where you go for bachelors.
Well, that was the first time where I actually, like, I was kind of surprised by the movie, because I thought when Michael Douglas was calling all his buddies and showing off how great he is at using his phone by doing four-way calling or whatever, I thought
that's what gets this movie into the science fiction label. Yeah. Is that this is an old man who knows all the functions on his phone.
So I expected him to be the, like, instigator for this whole thing.
Come on, you guys, you got to come out. I'm getting married finally.
But it's Kevin Kline, the Floridian Santa Claus character, who
he just has a beard.
So does Santa Claus?
He's not so much Santa Claus as Art Carney from Harry and Tonto. Okay.
Yeah, he's just an old guy who's, you know, loves his wife, but he's a little tired of being in Florida and being married.
He doesn't want to. Well, he's tired of being old. He doesn't want to feel old.
Yeah,
and he is. They all feel this way.
He wants to have a last Vegas.
He feels
Vegas,
put out.
If you will.
He feels put out to pasture.
They all feel.
And he wants to come back away from the pasture.
They're a bunch of space cowboys who feel like they've got something else to offer.
Yeah, yeah. They're on a boat trip. Wait, that's not an old person movie. Out to sea.
I mean, Roger Moore's pretty old in that.
They've got absolute power.
That's just the Clint Eastwood movie.
Well, it's pretty old.
They're getting their blood work done so that they can drive a Gran Torino into $1 million baby.
Mm-hmm. We got a real grudge match. There you go.
Okay, that's an old person thing. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. It's a real best exotic marigold hotel.
So there's some hilarious laugh-em-ups as they all find their way to Las Vegas.
They all escape, and Kevin Kline's wife, before he goes, gives him a card that says, "What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas." And taped to it is a one Viagra pill and one condom.
She gives him a hall pass, if you will. Trademark me.
No, you didn't.
Oh, wow.
Trademark Dan McCoy.
It's a movie. There's a movie called Hall Pass.
Check it.
That's patent trolling, right?
Trademark.
Yeah, it is exactly patent trolling. It's exactly what it is. And you, sir, are a pox on society. You're hurting innovation. You're hurting small business.
Whatever. They got to pay me for that.
Now you go live under your patent bridge and eat patent billy goats, you patent troll. Answer me these patent questions three, or cross my bridge ye shall not be.
Anyway, Kevin
I like this.
Kline.
Wait, I like this patent troll character.
Yeah, sure.
So does he just, like, comb through the libraries of the patent office all the time, scurrying through the dark hallways to see what hasn't been patented?
Yeah, he's like, I got your horns patented, Gruff.
Those
are mine.
I patented the concept of eating a tin can, goats.
Yep.
Oh, wow, a goat callback. Awesome.
Yeah, anyway. So they go to Las Vegas. Kevin Klein wants to get laid. Morgan Freeman wants to feel young again. Robert De Niro doesn't want to be there. And Michael Douglas is just kind of wandering around. You know, he's just in it to have a good time.
He wants to be with his buddies, you know.
And there's at first a problem because they booked a room at, what was it, Binion's?
Yeah.
But Binion's is closed for renovation in a really unnecessary side tangent that we didn't need to experience. Except that it brings them into contact with a startlingly singing siren, a sultry starlet, a sensational sex symphony?
Savvy?
Sex
a
lady.
Snappy.
Steenburgen, if
a
you will.
Steenburgen, comma Mary, known as Mary Steenburgen, who is singing her sultry seduction sonatas in the secluded space of the solitary, what's an S word for there's nobody there?
I don't know.
Sempty. Sempty of audience's members okay. room at the Binion casino. Yeah. They hang out with her for roughly 17 days.
To find solace.
To find solace in these septuagenarians.
Like, yep.
They all hit it off with her immediately, and they basically just get her to leave work in the middle of her
There's
singing
no audience.
Set.
There's no audience.
There's like two other people in that audience.
I have to assume her backstory is that like she owns the place, and she sings there as a hobby, or maybe like...
She didn't explain that when she was explaining her personal history.
Yeah, Michael Douglas cut her off in the scene where we stopped paying attention.
We were paying attention to the people in the background and the signs and such.
Because it was so much more interesting than what was happening in the foreground. So they go...
Binion's is on the old strip, right?
That's it is the on idea. The old strip, yeah.
So yeah, like that's why it's
now,
also.
You guys know Las Vegas. I've never been there. I have no real interest. But you guys have been there a lot.
Oh yeah,
times.
we're fucking pros.
You're old vague hands.
I mean, if
you're a bunch of Vegas.
If two Whoa, times
we are.
A lot
yeah,
of
yeah,
times.
Jumping
Don't
around.
Don't knock
in Spain
my mask off.
With your one Wolverine
you might
claw.
Mess up my beautiful face.
No, I mean, you know, the
sultry Spaniard Vega.
Basically, all we're saying is like there's an old Las Vegas, and then like there's the new strip,
the Last Vegas, if you will.
And like so, Steenburgen is singing at this like the old like seedier casinos, and that's why no one's there. And then most of the thing takes place on the new strip,
and because it's convenient for plot purposes that she can just leave work whenever she wants.
Yeah. So they go to which hotel was it?
Arias. I'm guessing sponsor of the movie.
Because there are a lot of scenes set there showing how amazing it is. Mm-hmm. And how easy it is to win a $5 buffet coupon at their prize wheel. Is that a Las Vegas thing?
I mean, that totally seems like something
you just
would
pay
find.
A dollar in the lobby for a Wheel of Fortune prize type thing. It's like it's like a opening entranceway portal to gambling.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a dollar and I can win $5 off the buffet. And next thing you know, you're sitting down at a blackjack table winning $100,000.
It's the porthole of gambling.
Yeah, Morgan the dark Freeman side does. Of gambling.
The dark side of gambling is you might end up with too much money. it doesn't fit in my pockets. Ah!
Yeah. That's one of the first things
we call
that happens.
Brewster's Millions.
So this is the first point where the characters split up and just kind of wander off like old men and have their own mini adventures before going back to the main party and going back on the main quest.
We have a great little side quest with Roger Bart.
Yeah,
as a well, that's Madonna.
Kevin Klein sees a woman from behind, thinks it's a woman, goes and hits on her, turns out to be Roger Bart as a Madonna impersonator, and then they have a surprisingly long conversation that goes on for a while and they become fast friends.
Well, this is one of the like this
fast
is,
five friends.
This is a weird
that's,
scene
that's
in the movie.
That's also patent trolling.
No, I copyrighted that. This is the idea of speedy numbers. That's mine.
This is a weird scene in the movie because it does the normal thing, which is to. Like, you think it's setting this transvestite up as the butt of the joke. That
and, like, he's going to see it's a transvestite and go, like, go, and then walk away.
But then, like, it ends up being, like, Kevin Klein then has a lengthy, friendly conversation with him and his other...
He seems
and,
super
like,
understanding of trans lifestyles.
And his coworkers. I mean, they seem to be professional transvestites.
Well, they've got a drag show. But it's just weird because it's
Talk
just, like,
about a drag show. I saw it. It was depressing. They reenact the lowest moment in every one of these female celebrities' lives. The Whitney Houston scene is impossible to sit through. I had to get up and leave. I thought when it was over, I finally walked in. That's when the Patty Hearst scene started. Oh, boy, was it rough.
Doesn't sound like a very popular drag character.
Patty Hearst?
Patty Hearst.
No.
But
well, it's like a roller derby character, Patty Burst.
Sure. I just found it interesting because it's
Patty Hurts would be the roller
That's
derby
That's way better.
Name.
I was going to say.
Patty Hurts, yeah.
It's like, how do I feel about this scene? they're still setting up the usual joke of a guy mistaking a guy in a dress for a lady.
But at the now same time, friends.
It's sort of understanding. I don't know.
Well, it's just, so hard to be mad at Kevin Kline.
It's just it's the one progressive moment in a movie which is otherwise old men leering at boobs for like an hour and 40 minutes. It like the one thing they don't have in the movie is Rodney Dangerfield like bugging his eyes out at a girl shaking her chest in his face. But they kind of do have that.
Yeah,
but
there's that great sequence where they...
With LMFAO.
They are at an LMFAO-themed, LMFAO-hosted bikini contest.
LMFAO-themed. Everyone wears retarded clothes and...
and sings that stupid song.
I apologize for saying that word.
Yeah, LMFAO. Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah. Anyway, so...
Clothes. So yeah,
we all know what word they should have said. You terrible.
Somehow
person.
They buy their way into a bikini judging contest.
Morgan Freeman wins $100,000 at blackjack because he cashed out his half.
And
of
he makes Turtle lead the table or something.
Turtle from Entourage, who's lost a lot of weight, gets uppity with
looking
him,
great.
And they make him. And how do they make him leave? They just threaten him. I don't remember.
He knocks a beer on him.
Robert
then the guy
De Niro
gets
shows
frustrated.
Up and tells him to leave or something.
No. Morgan Freeman knocks a beer on his lap.
He just gets frustrated.
He got a call about the
Stella
Artois
movie and beer on his lap.
Oh, okay. Well, people are taking turns hanging out with Mary Steenburgen. He wins this money, and they go to this LMFAO hosted bikini contest where they get. I guess they buy positions as judges, and this scene is literally just like. Six straight minutes, it feels like, them just looking at women in bikinis.
Yeah, girls bouncing around bikinis.
You missed the subtext, Elliot. LMFAO is going to lose their casino, so they need bikini girls to raise money to save it.
I didn't realize that.
Because gambling doesn't make enough money for them.
Or else Party Rockers, their casino, would be closed down and turned into condos for evil developers. Mm-hmm.
Reginald Bucksworth!
Yeah, the smooth jazz casino
the third,
is going to come
my
in.
Good man. The smooth, yeah, because Kenny G is going to knock it down and build a smooth jazz emporium.
Your rock and roll has no place in Las Vegas. That's what he says.
Yeah. We're all about keyboard music and vibraphones. So anyway, there's that.
I was going to say there's this great bikini contest where they just keep giving them all 10s, which totally devalues that rating.
Yeah.
If you give everybody a 10, then if everybody's a winner, everybody's a loser.
It's the Rolling Stone 3-star review of bikini contests. Yeah,
exactly.
You're like making the Incredibles argument. It's like, what is this, a participation award? Come on.
Exactly.
But then an old lady comes out in a swimsuit and they give her an 11, which I assume means she wins whatever the prize is.
Yeah.
And then the got lead from LMFAO takes his pants off and waves his crotch in Robert De Niro's face.
Mm-hmm.
And you think the scene's going to end with Robert De Niro ripping that man's throat out with his teeth. Instead, he gives him a 0. And everyone's like, yeah!
I assume this already exists on the internet.
They put so much work into it.
But if you want to make a gif of the guy from LMFAO rubbing his crotch in De Niro's
not
face.
Not rubbing, shaking. There's shaking. No physical contact.
Waggling his crotch.
Waggling is a perfect word for it.
I'm sure the director was like, you can waggle, just don't touch
it. In a bejeweled bikini brief.
It's in his contract.
Robert De Niro saw that part in the script, and it said rubs, and he crossed out and wrote waggles. It's in my contract, no less than 2.5 inches from my face.
Don't you think it'll be funnier
less than.
If he doesn't touch me?
Yeah.
That's my De Niro impression. Mm-hmm. It's terrible.
Yeah, no, that was very bad. not like I can do a particularly good De Niro impression.
No, it goes
either.
Like this. Hello, hello, hello. It's me, Robert De Niro.
What the fuck are you doing there, dude?
It's me.
Are you fucking patent trolling again?
Robert De Niro. I was in The Godfather Part 2.
I've got the patent on hello, hello, hello.
Yeah, so
England better pay you.
Yeah.
So they...
Moving forward,
which is not what the movie does. The characters wander around Las Vegas for a long time. They do they do young people stuff, but
at some point they get
that it's that Doritos Locos Red Bull taco commercial, whatever the hell it was.
It's a whole movie of a rapping granny.
Yeah, if this would be better if it's Rapping Granny the movie, because I'll tell you what that is, charting the rise and fall of this rapping granny as she reaches for the stars but flies too close to the sun, and her old person wings of wax melt, dropping her to the gutter and rock bottom.
So who's going to be the devilish figure in this?
Tonight on VH1 Behind the Music, Rapping Granny. Oh, I guess her agent is the... Her agent is the Daedalus figure.
The Daedalus?
Yeah, because he always dawdles.
Nice.
And she's, of course, the Icarus, in that she is the son... She's the daughter of a man who built the labyrinth, and then they were trapped in it.
Okay.
The Duddits figure.
The Duddy Kravitz figure.
We're not allowed to talk about Duddits. We're not doing a Dreamcatcher episode.
So, the let's just skip to whatever the closest
plot At some point, they end up, because Morgan Freeman did so well, they at the casino with this gambling thing, they are given a some kind of a life ward by the name played by Romany Malco.
A life ward.
What are they called? I won't make that
They're
sure.
given an old man apprentice.
Yeah, exactly.
As
this movie was directed by the director of Sorcerer's Apprentice, I think that's appropriate.
Exactly.
John Turtletaub.
They're given the massive suite that's usually reserved for 50 Cent, and he shows up later in a hilarious cameo.
Where he wants to join in the old man fun, but is turned away at the door.
Because he's not an ARP member.
Yeah.
No, I wish that was it, though. But anyway,
it was a great ad for this, I guess, penthouse you can rent at this hotel.
Yeah, and they live at this penthouse and hang out with girls and...
Yeah.
They take turns hanging out with Mary Steenburgen.
It turns out Robert De Niro has a crush on her. Michael Douglas has a crush on her. She starts to feel affection for Michael Douglas. They throw a huge party for Michael Douglas that they invite every character we've seen in the movie to.
Including, like, the cast of Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
Roger Bart and his other drag friends.
His drag pals. Dragons, they're called.
There's women from the bachelorette party they met down at the club.
Turtle is there, having become their slave after he is told that they are East Coast mob bosses who could have him killed.
Yeah, Romany Malco, for some reason, has decided to make them apologize. Turtle apologize to them for getting in fisticuffs by pretending that they're all mob people, and thus Turtle is in fear of his life for the rest of the movie and does whatever they want him to because he doesn't want to die.
I think it's because somebody told him he'd get to act with Robert De Niro.
No, I can understand why he took the role. Yeah, I don't understand why the character is doing that thing. So they throw this big party where all their dreams come true. Mm-hmm. Morgan Freeman sees his son who tracks him down.
Just
and
like
says,
Draco Malfoy loves Dobby or whatever the fuck you call that little guy.
Adobe, the car that's made out of clay?
Wait, yeah. Adobo?
Yeah, Adobo, Abobo from Final Fight, right?
No, that's Double Dragon. The Abobos are those big guys.
Oh, that's right. I got my side scrollers mixed up. Anyway, is there any way we can talk less about this movie?
Yeah,
they get
probably.
They have a big party. Morgan Freeman's son catches up with him, and he says, hey, just because I'm old doesn't mean I don't want to dance, so let's hang out.
And drink.
Do we have a synchronized dance at that point?
Yes, there certainly is. Kevin Kline and Morgan Freeman takes his time dancing with every one of the drag queens, cross-dressing performers. I don't know what the professional name is.
Sure.
Kevin Kline manages to snag a bridesmaid from the group of people who earlier told him that he reminds her of her grandpa.
Yeah.
But now she's totally into him and wants to have sex with his grandpa figure. But after she takes off her clothes, he realizes, you know what? If he can't share this experience with his wife, who said, do what you want, but don't tell me about it, then it isn't worth having. And so he says, hey, thanks, but no thanks.
I found this denouement a little disappointing. Although I did like that the...
I mean, it was a way to trick her into seeing her boobs, like in Screwballs.
But I did kind of like the sweet moment of the woman being like, you know what? I wish I could marry a guy like you someday.
I thought you were...
And then Kevin Kline afterwards being like, but I bet a blowjob would be okay as she's leaving, which was a ruder joke than I expected the movie to make.
Yeah, because you're like, man, he is a good guy and a creep, just like me.
I think you're forgetting that I called that line.
Yeah, that's true.
Literally saying it a couple seconds before it happened.
So who's the creep now?
Elliot's the creep. You're
I'm
right,
the
Amy.
Creep, or am I secretly the author of Last Vegas?
And William F. Vegas.
I put myself into the mind of a creep to write this part.
It was difficult. I studied creeps. I read up on them. I followed Dan and Stewart around for a while.
Hey, wait, why am I being brought into this?
Two words. Wormy boner.
Okay, yeah, I made that up.
And let's continue. So Kevin Kline and Morgan Freeman, their character arcs are over. Now, Robert De Niro...
They might as well die.
Yeah, they might as well drop dead right now in the movie. Not in real life, they're national treasures. Robert De Niro says to Michael Douglas, do you really love this woman you're marrying? And Michael Douglas is like, she's really nice. And he's like, no. If you don't really love her, you shouldn't do it. And then Mary Steenburgen shows up at the party. They're both interested in her, and... Michael Douglas pushes Robert De Niro into a pool so that he can get to her first.
Which is really off limits. Like, of all the terrible things that they do, like, just like he's an old man. Like,
like De Niro just elbows old Michael Douglas.
No, no, or, Michael wait, Douglas.
Sorry, the other way around.
Checks Robert De Niro into the pool. Michael yeah. Douglas could have broken his hip doing that.
Yeah.
If anything, you
wait,
should
Michael Douglas could have broken his hip. Hip checking Robert De Niro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait. Wait. What?
He was in Grudge Match.
He was in Grudge Match.
He's keeping it tight.
And then he falls in the pool and then gets to do like some good like face wet acting.
He mm-hmm. Robert De Niro's response when he falls into the pool, his facial expression, it's like he's in a Stooges movie.
Yeah, he might as well have
whoa, 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 whoa.
He might as well have fallen into a vat of cream pies.
Just like everything these old guys do in the movie, every time they do something, beautiful women flock to them because mm-hmm. that's the coolest thing they could have ever possibly done.
Yeah, for some reason. So
it is movie, very much a like arrested male fantasy, the whole movie.
Yeah. Oh, the idea that...
That you get to hang out with Kevin Klein and Morgan Freeman all the time?
That you get to have a Las Vegas
that
and
men
ladies.
Of that men of any age are like catnip to big-breasted women
yeah.
in their mid to early 20s, sure. I'm guessing.
And also that, though the world has moved on...
I mean,
you
I buy that with Kevin Klein, but no one else.
And also, but also that, like, this is...
Well, yeah, I mean, he's great.
Kevin
the
Klein's
extras
great.
In this movie are cast like a Cinemax bikini movie. Every woman in the movie, aside from Mary Steenburgen, seems to be about 24 years old, super chesty, and wearing either a bikini or a dress made out of, like, some kind of second skin fabric that... Just
but like
up.
Psylocke would wear.
Like, I've never been to Las Vegas, but it seems like for a huge tourist destination, there were no tourists walking around. There was just like sexy ladies
mm-hmm.
everywhere. And yeah. I want to know, where is this legend, this fabled city of the sexy ladies?
This Las Vegas you speak of.
This Lust Vegas, which would be a good name for
yeah,
a Cinemax
I think that's
show.
A great idea.
Yeah. You know what? Let's pitch that. Okay. It's called Lust Vegas. And it's at a casino where people pay in sex.
Wait, what do you
it's
win?
It's about a call-in
you win pleasure
show.
Beyond yeah. their wildest dreams.
Where people call in and they talk about their sexy times in Las Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, it's and it's sex-themed games.
Yeah.
So, like, instead of poker, it's strip poker.
I mean, you can just keep the name poker.
Erotic, yeah, instead of roulette, it's, I don't know.
Boublette.
Boublette, yeah, there you go. Great. And Michael Boublette plays it. And instead of slot machines, they're just slot machines.
Yeah,
them
I mean,
slot
yeah,
machines,
exactly.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. Disgusting. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have said that. But anyway,
we've all said things we regret tonight.
Oh, oh, yeah, we've had a real Las Vegas experience.
What stays in Las Vegas episode? Wait.
Wait, hold on. What happens in the Las Vegas
Las
broadcast?
Vegas?
Okay, in when, the Las Vegas happens in the stay.
When Larry's, when Las Vegas met Sally.
No, no, no. When Cousin Larry met Suzanne Vega, they went to Regis.
All right. When Vega from Street Fighter 2 stays in Las Vegas.
No, 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 no.
But not
when,
Super Street Fighter 2, because no. he's an asshole.
When
that
Lou
one.
Bega slays Lassie, it stays...
When Lassie Hobstrom makes a racist... Wait,
this
hold
sounds
on.
Like this is the worst prophecy I've ever heard.
No, trust me, it's a quatrain. It makes sense metaphorically.
Anyway...
So
everyone
they're
is
all
happy.
Mad at each other, but then in the end, Rob De Niro stops Michael Douglas from marrying this girl by pushing him into a pool. Mary Steenburgen and Michael Douglas are going to get married, and
there's a couple shots of Morgan Freeman looking like he's getting experiencing another stroke.
There's a scene where Michael Douglas is talking about how he's old, but he doesn't want to be old, and what happened to his life, and they keep cutting to Morgan Freeman literally just staring at, into the distance. And you just wonder, like, what is he thinking at that moment? It's like they took a still image of Morgan Freeman and just put it up on screen.
What was the Russian theorist? Was it like the Kuleshkov?
Yeah, the Kuleshov.
Yeah, like the experiments where they just like use the same expression.
If you put Morgan Freeman
it.
And then cut to a shot of soup, he'd be hungry. Yeah. You showed Morgan Freeman and cut to a shot of like a grave, he's sad.
Yeah.
Show Morgan Freeman and cut to a shot of boobs, and you have the movie Las Vegas.
Yeah. So it's a blank expression.
Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful experiment in shot conjunction and juxtaposed editing.
Yeah.
So Michael Douglas.
The theory of montage.
In the end, everyone's happy, and Kevin Klein.
Speaking of montages, there's a great dress up montage
That's
in this
true.
Movie.
True. There is no
with Romany Malco looking at them and shaking his head.
Thumbs up, shaking
up.
His head.
It is the laziest dressing up montage. They never even get dressed in anything really crazy or silly.
No.
That was in their contract.
I mean, Morgan
as well.
Freeman's dressed in a kind of a crazy jacket the whole time.
It looks like the devil.
Like a quilty thing.
If Bullet in the Head could squeeze in a silly hat mask dress up scene, then surely Las Vegas could spend some time and energy into that.
Yeah.
I feel like Kevin Klein pushed for more of a crazy dress up thing, and Robert De Niro poo-pooed it.
I'll wear two silly jackets, but they can't be that silly. So this is a movie that feels like a bunch of doddering old men wandering around Las Vegas. But it's not. They don't really do too many. They say quippy old man jokes, but there's no situations where they're old. There's no Mr. Magoo type things.
Do we get the final ending though, where like
Michael Douglas is going to marry Mary Steenburgen?
Yeah.
And Robert De Niro's no
they're
going
to get married. That's opening the door to Las Vegas 2. We didn't stick around till the end of the credits, so there might have been a stinger.
There's probably a stinger scene where like 50 Cent looks at the camera and is like, "Those guys know how to party." Wink.
Kevin Klein doesn't.
His teeth sparkle, and then a magic fairy hits him with a wand, and he turns into a frog or some shit. Mm. I don't know.
Oh my God, he's that frog character from the Las Vegas comics. Amazing.
Exactly. Yeah.
And Kevin Klein doesn't answer his phone, telling him that Michael Douglas is getting married because he's too busy in conjugal joy with his wife Joanna Gleason
in a circular bed like the one from Las Vegas. So did he buy one of those,
I guess.
They go and they somehow afford that?
I was having I was talking to Stewart. We were wondering like what the value of the circular rotating bed is.
We're not
like,
going
to
talk about
it's a sex
our sexual suggestions for how you would use.
I know, but
that
like
seems totally out of character for this podcast.
I'm just confused. I don't understand what the necessary sexual advantage.
I think
of having
it requires one person to stand off to the side of the bed.
I'll tell you this, Dan. Uh-huh. Have you ever had an orgasm while dizzy? Because if not, you have not lived. You start spinning while you're doing it, and you'll see what I mean.
Like a normal human has to just spin around during the process. Like I guess like a
wait, how
windmill?
Are you having sex? Hold on.
The right way, dude.
Okay.
Dan, it saves you the trouble of balancing on your penis and spinning around that way.
I don't know that you guys are doing this.
That's how Bazooka Joe orgasms.
Well, I'm Bazooka Joe.
Because they always do the backwards flip when they hear the joke, right?
That's not the flip take.
Yeah,
that's
but they're not spinning. He's just falling over
yeah,
backwards.
Yeah, but it's like the same thing.
Not at all, in any way. So this movie, if I was going to subscribe it, I'd say it's like Grown Ups, the movie, with old people.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, these four actors were offered a vacation in Las Vegas if they would occasionally appear in front of a camera and just talk to each other.
Yeah.
But that all, but
thus
Kevin
explaining
Klein,
the minuscule budget.
But Kevin Klein and Morgan Freeman almost save it in some cases because they're just charismatic old men.
Yeah. Let's skip to final judgments. And I'm going to start off. And I'm gonna actually say that I really, by the slimmest of margins, kind
of
like this movie.
By
on a
the
scale
skin
of
their dentures, they
on
made
a scale
it
of good bad movie, bad movie, movie I kind of liked, just on the basis of the charm of the actors and, as you say, mostly Kevin Klein and Morgan Freeman. I kind of liked it. It's not a good movie. What it is a kind of enjoyable sitcom about four old guys. It's the Golden Guys.
It is the Golden Guys, yeah.
You know, so I kind of liked it on that level.
The Golden Guys go to Las Vegas.
Stuart, what do you got to say about it?
I think that's fair. I mean, it could easily be a bad movie. I'll agree with you, though. I feel like it's such a non-movie, but it's so inoffensive, and Kevin Klein can be kind of funny. I
don't know if I would agree with inoffensive, since, again, it is an entire
no,
movie of old men
right.
leering at women's boobs.
Mm-hmm.
But I like
that's
it doesn't.
Not
I guess
inaccurate.
It's just super. I guess it's
no,
just
old men do. I mean, men of all ages do that. But I don't know if there should have been more substance to the movie, maybe.
Yeah,
and by substance, I don't mean like a message or like emotion. I just mean jokes that aren't.
I guess
like,
holding a mirror up to nature isn't enough for you.
I'm just saying, if at that age we can't fight our bestial urges, then what hope is there for humanity? I like if there was.
I mean, there aren't jokes, really,
it's
right?
It's one of those movies where, like, there's a couple old man jokes in the beginning, and then they kind of forget that they're old men for a lot of the movie. Mm-hmm. It's just like they're just not 20-year-olds, you know?
I mean, there's a couple. Once again, Morgan Freeman and Kevin Klein accomplish a lot with just, like, funny body movements. And there's
and
a good scene where there's a scene that's kind of funny where Morgan Freeman drinks a bunch of vodka and Red Bull.
Yeah,
and then just starts talking and can't stop talking.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And a less talented actor would have made that insufferable, but he managed to make it work.
I will say,
yeah, like
movie,
if Robert De Niro had been the one for that to happen to, it would have been terrible.
Less
no
talented
offense.
Than Morgan Freeman is what he's saying. Robert De Niro.
Wow.
I would say he's less funny than Morgan Freeman is.
That's true. Less
okay,
funny.
Okay, less
certainly.
Funny. I'll buy. Yeah, I would say this movie doesn't really fit into our categories. I cannot say it's a movie I kind of liked. There were a couple times when I laughed at it, but. It's not like, I feel like for a movie to be something I kind of liked, I would have to like have gotten more than like a thimbleful of pleasure watching it.
Maybe I just enjoyed watching it with my buddies.
I will say
that. When we're all old, 58 years from now, let's watch Las Vegas together.
Okay. Yeah. How's that going to happen? So we're all going to show up to Las Vegas.
Okay.
Dan's going to be getting married again, I guess.
Yeah, of course, by that point, it will be called Las Vegas because the apocalypse will have happened.
Sure.
Bikers will roam the earth.
And it's going to be run by mutants.
Of course. Of course. But they're still running good casinos.
Yeah.
If anything, they're a little more honest than the people running the casinos.
Yeah, the
now.
Mutants are honest, of course, to a fault.
But the mutants are kind of prudish, so there's no drinking, and prostitution is now illegal.
Because
of
the radiation priests.
Exactly. The radiation priests who believe that the nuclear war was
the
anger of a righteous god. Yeah,
of course. And has gifted the mutants with beloved radiation and mutation. And
yeah, because that was his gift upon being touched. And of course, they keep the last pieces.
So we're going to arrive.
They keep the last pieces of uranium.
Battle hardened road warriors.
Inside of Binions, and people are exposed to it to see what God has in store for them, what gifts he's going to give them. Usually it's cancer, but sometimes it's like a superpower.
Yeah.
It's radiation, Dan. That's what it does to people.
Well,
but anyway, I would say. It's not a bad movie or a good bad. It's not a good bad movie, but it's not. This is a. I tell you what, I think Dan would. This is what I think Dan would think of as a movie to watch on a plane.
Yeah, if you want to see it, if you're a young actor and you want a object lesson in how being charming can save material, maybe watch this movie.
That's good.
This is a learning experience.
As homework.
So before we move on to our next segment, just want to take a moment for a word from our sponsor. And this episode, again, thank you for continuing to sponsor us, is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform making it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. Look, guys, I've said it before.
Mm-hmm.
It's the modern world.
Exactly.
Everyone's, wait, what?
Everyone is on the internet. Literally, we're on the internet right now.
Literally everybody. Yeah, this is you're listening.
People
to
People are
the
listening
internet.
To us through the internet.
We were digitized and now live on the internet like a bunch of lawnmowers.
Like a bunch of kid videos.
Like a bunch of trons.
A bunch of virtuosities over here. A bunch of brain scans.
But the point is, if you're not on the internet, you are a chump. So you need a website.
Now, you didn't say champ, right?
No, I said chump.
That's the opposite of a champ.
Yeah.
And chimp is kind of the middle ground.
It's
but
true.
You're a chump. Get on the internet.
Chimps
start
can
your
be
website.
Champ sometimes.
And if you want to start your website, a good way to do that is to go to squarespace.com/flophouse and enter offer code flophouse at checkout for 10% off. Here's the thing about Squarespace. You don't want to learn HTML.
No, you're not a nerd.
Come on. Squarespace makes it easy.
No, you listen to a cool podcast.
You got your options. You got beautiful design with their pre-made templates. You got drag and drop content. You can just click on something and drag
dragon
it over.
Droppings.
And the computer does the business for you.
No, Stuart, it's not drag and droppings. You can drag and drop in a graphic interface.
Yeah. You got 24/7 tech support through live chat and email. And plans start at a mere $8 a month, including a free domain name if you sign up for a year. You also have responsive design. Your website will look beautiful on, say, a phone or a tablet.
With great power comes responsive design.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that the original.
And every site comes with an online store. So why don't you go over to Squarespace, use the offer code FLOPHOUSE to get 10% off your first purchase, and to show your support for us, the FLOPHOUSE.
Your favorite podcast.
Mm-hmm. And thank you to Squarespace for their support of the FLOPHOUSE.
Thanks, Squarespace. And thanks to the listener for going to Squarespace.
But
and
now,
buying their product.
And for listening to our show.
Yeah, not that as much. Squarespace. Do that.
A better tomorrow, right?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
I think that
I
might
we
be
check.
That's Omni like consumer products.
Yeah, it's like Oscorp or something.
So
or Max Shrek Industries.
Let's move on to letters.
Letters from listeners.
Wait,
listeners from letters.
Wait, this is very unusual.
Some other chump used to sing a song about letters, but not today, because it's me, Stuart.
You're taking
singing.
Advantage of the fact that I'm tired from taking care of a baby. That's why I've been kind of bad this episode, and this letters song's not very good. Take it, Stuart.
Take what? I'm too busy reading a letter. Dan is holding it and rubbing my legs because they're tired from working and running around and being a steward.
So your relationship is kind of a five-year-old and his dad type thing. I didn't realize that at all.
Being a steward is inherently tiring to legs? I don't, okay.
Yeah, well, you see, Stewart works standing up.
That's true.
Plus, he hops everywhere.
Wait, do I have to sing another part?
No, it's fine.
It's an operetta, Stuart. Yes, you do.
I think it's fine.
Verse, chorus, verse,
so,
right?
So, no.
On the first day of Stewart, this Stewart gave to us.
This is an A, B, five golden letters. A, B, C, A, B format of a song. So
it's a C-R-A-P format.
So,
Waka Waka.
Statler and Waldorf, what do you think of that joke? So this first letter goes
if
like
this.
If
I was more on my game, I'd have a Statler and Waldorf joke for you there. But I don't.
Hey, dudes.
Did Stuart write this letter?
Long-time listener, second-time writer of a letter. You may remember me as the person who has a crush on Tom Noonan / Dan.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
that's cool.
Well, seeing
you know Tom Noonan and Dan are not the same person, right?
Aren't we?
Tom Noonan, how did you get here?
Wow, Francis Dollar
I've
I
been
himself.
With you the whole time. Inside of you.
That's weird. I don't like that.
It's a pretty great Tom Noonan / Dan impression.
Yeah. Well, seeing...
That is what it would sound like if Tom Noonan and Dan got in that pod from the fly and combined it to one being.
Well, seeing how both Dan and Mr. Noonan are married, I'm still here looking for a boyfriend. Imagine my surprise when you guys mention that enemy of the podcast, David Kalin, is single. I hear he looks like a Jewish mountain man. And I'm very much into that. So if you guys wanted to give my email to him, I would be totally cool with that. I don't know what his type is, but if he's into ladies with blue hair and tattoos, maybe we're meant to be. Sincerely, Sarah, last name withheld.
Do you like sports?
Yeah, that's his type, is sports.
I should probably mention...
Are you a sport? Because then he
do
might
like...
Do you like
to correct things?
I should probably mention I'm not Jewish, so this sort of depends on whether or not he dates lapsed Catholics. Well,
would
Ellie,
Catholics
you'd be
that
able
sit
to...
in laps?
Yeah.
Just for the record... David, my brother,
does not
date Jewish girls. As far as I know, he's not involved in anyone, but he never tells me these things. And he, if he likes sports,
does he like women with blue hair and tattoos?
Honestly, the only thing I know
that seems more like my thing.
The only thing I know he has opinions on is sports.
All right.
So if you are hockey, basketball, football, or baseball,
are you a good listener?
Because he is a talker.
Yeah.
Do you like sarcasm?
Do you like having your balls busted for no good reason?
He has the Kalin family curse, I think.
Of talkativeness.
Cursed by a gypsy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Talk to me so much, will you? Well, from now on, your generations to come will never stop talking. Oh, my aching bones. Oh, you wouldn't carry my bucket of water with me to my hut, though. And so I curse ye with a tongue that will never rest.
But thank you for writing in. This I have to admit... Because we have a backlog, this email is a bit old. Maybe Sarah's
she might be married by
conditions
now.
Have changed, but if not, maybe we'll
maybe
make a love connection out of this.
Sure.
Okay.
Let me pull out my Cupid-colored arrow.
Dave, why don't you write in and say if you're interested? Your Cupid-colored arrow?
Are you guys not
why do you say
anymore?
That weird?
Because I'm tired. Because I'm tired and my tongue is half asleep. I sat on it by accident. Now it's all pins and needles.
For some reason, that's not a good enough excuse for me.
No, because you do it all the time, 24 hours a day.
That's true.
Actually, that made me think of a new Hellraiser character, Pintongue. He just looks like a normal guy till he opens his mouth. You see his tongue.
He's got a bunch of pins on it?
In his tongue, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And he drives a Pinto.
and that's the only kind of bean he eats.
So,
I mean, it's difficult. He's got a bunch of pins.
His favorite old-time Disney animator, Pinto Colvig, the voice of Goofy.
This next letter starts out, "Good day, Flophouse. Since coming across your
good
podcast
day to you too.
In early spring, I've been going through all the old episodes. The other day, I was driving to work when the app for the Chaos Experiment, number 48,
an old one.
Started up with a warning on the subpar audio quality of this episode. I'm not sure what happened next. I may have reached for my iPod to skip the app, but the rest of the podcast continued, and it was at 1.5 times speed audio.
Awesome.
My reverence for the Flophouse host plummeted as I thought, these fucking idiots think their listeners are going to listen to them talk about a movie at 1.5 times speed? Are you fucking kidding? Shitheads.
It's a lot of unnecessary swearing.
Wow. I turned the Flophouse off. Many hours later in the day, I discovered the crappy new iOS 7 operating system has a playback speed button on the podcast app, allowing the user to listen to a podcast at half, normal, 1.5,
in case
and
you
two
want
times
us
speed.
To sound like this. Yeah.
Letters, letters to the
Flophouse. Yeah, let's make it last longer.
Why on earth this feature exists is beyond my comprehension, and I transferred my very rational disgust in the direction of the shit for brainiacs at Apple. Many apologies for momentarily doubting you fellas. Thanks, Kyle, last name withheld. Well,
no problem, Comicola.
No thanks, Kyle, for your doubting. You got really angry at us.
Yeah,
you got really angry at us, buddy.
I think we can take it.
You know what?
We're just voices in the ether.
Let's take, you know what? I'm going to take Whispers Kyle's from side the dark. On this one. If I didn't know that we weren't screwing around with listeners, I'd get pretty mad too if I was a listener.
Mm-hmm.
If I was like, look, hey, these knuckleheads are trying out some kind of experiment on me.
Some sort of hilarious Andy Kaufman.
Sort of chaos experiment, and I don't like it.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. But thanks for continuing to give us a chance. But moving on.
Don't sound desperate, dude.
All my...
we're grade A prime beef.
Sure. The next letter goes a little something like this. I write to you from I write to you from a hotel room in South Carolina, lying in a shitty bed, and
wait,
I guess
no,
thinking
it's a
about
poor,
you.
Poor quality bed, not a bed that's full of shit, right?
I don't. She can't. He or she cannot respond.
letter. Tell me. New information. Letter. Explain.
The three of you and some guest hosts kept me company for my 13-hour road trip from Massachusetts yesterday, and I thought I'd thank you. Feel free to chip in for gas money. Anywho, in the stretch of episodes,
you realize we weren't actually in the car, right? That was just our voices trapped, as if a witch had put us into a magic mirror of some kind.
Keep
curses.
Yourself in the mirror. Anywho,
wait, what?
In the stretch of episodes from the classic X-Men Origins Wolverine and the Jonathan Travolta vehicle from Perish with Love,
Jonathan Travolta,
the discussion of best supporting actress winners came up. I can't remember which episode, but essentially Dan said that Monique winning the Oscar in 2009 would usher in an era of supporting actress winners with apostrophes in their name.
No, an area of supporting actress winners. Just we have built a town for them, and we don't have to deal with them anymore.
That's racist. And now...
against supporting actress winners.
And now history shows how prescient Dan truly is. For lo, in this year, a mere 4 years after a baby-throwing performance by Monique, the best supporting actress winner was Lupita Nyong'o.
Just
nice pronunciation,
dude. You've done it bad enough. Just keep going.
So good on you, Dan.
You're only going to dig deeper on this one.
Oh, my best, Brian, last name. He even spelled it out. He said Nyong'o. So.
What, he put the phonetic spelling in there for
you?
And yet you still have trouble with it.
Yeah. So I guess the point of this letter is donate to the Foundation for Dan's Tongue.
Hi.
Just $2 a day.
Do you have trouble saying ordinary words? In the course of your ordinary day, you may have Dan's Tongue Syndrome, or DTS. Sufferers of DTS often don't know they have it because they don't listen to themselves when they talk. It must be pointed out to them by their asshole friends who make fun of them all the time. So please, make fun of your friends. Or if you have DTS, let your friends make fun of you.
And if you have DTF, that's something else entirely.
I don't know what that is.
Down to fuck.
Now, why do you look at me when you said that, dude?
Well, because you knew what it was.
Well, of course, but...
There was no reason for you to bring that kind of vulgarity into this podcast about a movie about old men wanting to have sex with young women.
So moving on. This next letter. First off, hearty congratulations all around for what appears to be an explosion in podcast popularity. You guys are the best and deserve to have...
Don't worry, this episode will take care of that.
And deserve to have Cat on a Hot 10-10 Roof. Ranked right
Tan-tan.
Up there
Tan-tan.
In the annals of radio plays with Wells' War of the Worlds, and that I'm sure Elliot's sultry tones also caused widespread panic in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Second, and to the heart of the matter.
This is the hoax where they thought a southern woman somewhere liked Tintin. People were just running out into
terrified
the streets.
People.
So horrified. Chaotic.
I don't understand. It defies logic.
The government, they fell apart. They can't help us.
Second, and to the heart of the matter, as a woman who dates other women, I've waited with somewhat bated breath for the arrival of Blue is the Warmest Color and its potential for a not shitty slash entirely unbelievable slash somewhat skin-crawling depiction of the intimacy between my people. While my partner and I
my
differed...
People.
I got confused.
While my partner and I differed on the intricacies of the film itself, narrative, style, pacing, etc., we agreed that it is an achingly beautiful movie. But in many ways, the flack that the movie has received since Cannes regarding the sex scenes... kind of
like a dog.
I think it's actually pronounced Cain. Regarding the sex scenes, kind James of prepped
it's
us.
It's pronounced Canes, as in a selection of Canes.
Oh boy. Kind of prepped us to feel alienated before we even took our seats. Granted, most people who see the movie probably won't chew on their feelings about it quite as much, just because statistically most people who see the movie won't be on the queer spectrum. But man, without the countless printed back and forth about the sex, she and I probably would have either just been pleased at a more realistic stab at big screen lady banging, or felt the general vague discomfort one feels in a theater full of strangers watching actors go at it. In a perfect world, we would watch movies with fresh eyes, and obviously we're all swayed to a degree by critics or friends, but the coverage of this movie has been so outrageous and had such a marked effect on how I watched it that I was wondering if the hype around a film, whether controversy or acclaim or anything really, has genuinely altered your enjoyment of it. Whether it's you spending 45 minutes waiting for an infamous scene, like how I was warned repeatedly about the subtextual ambiguity of the rape scene in the original Straw Dogs, which takes you out of the film as soon as that scene actually occurs, or if you've gone in really, really ready for some lauded film to blow you away and sort of convinced yourself that it was better than your gut told you, like Sorry Dan, Rachel Getting Married. Either way, thank you, gentlemen, for lighting my world every other Saturday. Signed, Sappho, she didn't have a last name to withhold. I mean...
Well, thank you for listening, and we appreciate the compliments.
But no, thank you for telling me how I feel about Rachel getting married.
What? No, she was just saying how she feels about it.
No, I thought that she was saying that I was convincing
myself.
No,
she was
saying... I think you recommended Rachel getting married, mm-hmm. and she's saying you're a jerk face.
Or, yeah, that was. Yeah. Those are the words. Dumbass, jerk face, butt for brains. Yeah, I think that was what she said.
Wow, she kept it pretty clean.
She was saying that it was a movie she had heard great things about, but in her gut didn't like it.
Ah.
So she was apologizing to you that she
maybe
didn't like
you
it.
Were the words that she had heard.
I apologize.
And she thinks
to you.
You're a turd.
I have to say that.
For misunderstanding.
Usually, I'm not swayed as much before I see a movie by what people have said about whether they like it than by what I expect the movie to be from, like, the marketing materials or what I expect the experience to be like. And often, a movie that I should be more open minded with, I don't like because it doesn't live up to what I thought it was going to be, which is not fair to the movie. But with Blue's the Warmest Color, I haven't seen it yet, but I feel like I'd be more tainted by all the stories about how horrible it was to work with the director and how the two stars
that made me feel bad about
felt
it.
Really tortured by him, you know.
I've actually read very little about it other than, you know, all the stuff Dan said about it. So I'm looking forward to going into it with relatively fresh eyes.
Like a newborn babe.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Like a powder.
No, powder was it's just like a guy with lightning.
Yeah, but I thought he was like a homunculus or something.
I know he was
totally fresh.
His mother was struck by lightning, which made him into a bald albino Superman.
Okay,
I can't think of like a really great example of this off the top of my head, but I do feel like I often fall into the trap of expecting too much from a movie. Based on, you know, it being very well regarded.
Well, there's certainly times when, like, if a movie is hyped up too much in terms of it's a classic or something mm-hmm. like that, or it's amazing, I feel like sometimes I have to, like, settle myself before I see it and be like, let me just watch this as if I've heard, as if it just started now.
Yeah. I remember, I feel like in this last year, I remember watching the screener of Her and being like, okay, I like this. I don't...
Well, that was a movie where I'd read a lot about how amazing it was. And when I watched it, I think it was more that it was not the movie I was interested in seeing. And so I was like, oh, this is...
There's a certain point in that movie where it goes down a very, I feel like, traditional expected role.
Route.
And I kind of expected it to keep the inventiveness of the early scenes throughout the film. And it just didn't do that. But you were talking about, like...
Eep.
Godzilla, I mean, which you haven't seen.
I still haven't seen it yet.
Like,
but I mean, I've seen the original Godzilla.
Right. But I liked...
By which I mean the 1998 version. Why, are there other versions?
I liked
one
the new Godzilla.
Movie.
I neither loved it nor hated
Baby
it,
Godzilla.
But I feel like there's so many people out there who either love that movie.
They're like Velociraptors.
The sequel to Baby Geniuses, Baby Godzillas.
Mm-hmm. They got big diapers.
Yeah, Godzilla has... there are people on either... There's very few people in the middle ground except for Dan. It's very lonely there.
Somebody
join him in the middle ground.
But I'm kind of surprised that people either loved or hated that movie so much because I thought that movie was
a good version of an old style monster movie. Like it was a it was nothing totally new, but it was a more classic monster film than other film. And you were saying that you think that it was probably because of the way it was marketed, where it that movie had such great marketing that it promised something crazy that maybe it didn't deliver.
I haven't seen it yet either, but I feel like every criticism I read is that like not enough Godzilla, boring, and that's not enough to turn me off of the movie.
Yeah, I feel the same. I haven't seen it, but I feel the same way. But I do feel like there are movies like Godzilla's trailers were fantastic, and maybe it falls in the same trap that Prometheus fell into, which I think is the example I used when I was talking to you, where that trailer was fantastic, the original Prometheus trailer. It is maybe the best trailer I can think of since the original Alien trailer, which is maybe the best trailer ever cut for a movie. The trailer for Alien is so scary on its own and so suspenseful and tells no lies about the movie, and everything that's promised in that trailer comes to fruition in the movie. Whereas Prometheus, one, they had that stupid mystery aspect to it where they're like, maybe we're not going to tell you what's in this movie. But the trailer was so good and the movie was like fun. I enjoyed it a lot, but it's nothing, no great shakes. You know, that I think people, instead of being like, that was all right, we're like, that sucks.
Put that on the DVD box.
That was
box.
The worst.
No great shakes.
Very quick. Last letter of the evening. Hello, floppers. I was told you like it when listeners keep their letters short. Regards, Billy, last name withheld.
Oh, hey, thanks, Billy.
So thanks.
Billy Wilder, everybody.
Yeah. The late Billy Wilder.
Well, when was he supposed
that
to
made
get here?
Him one of the greatest screenwriters of classic Hollywood. But now we move on to our final segment of the evening.
Okay.
Final judgments.
No.
Final because judgment. Final is in final.
What did
judgment,
you think of those letters?
I gave them good letters. Yeah, they're good.
Yeah,
good
they're
letters.
Great letters. Thanks.
Yeah.
I was just testing you guys.
Thanks for writing in. I'm sorry that
and
we didn't have
end
better
of the show.
Answers.
Good night,
them.
Everybody.
No. There's one last segment.
What's the last segment, Dan?
Where we recommend movies that we actually liked. Unlike Las Vegas, even though I kind of like Las Vegas, but not like I like the movie that I'm going to recommend,
which is
I had the pleasure of seeing "Stop Making Sense," the Talking Heads concert film directed by Jonathan Demme.
Jonathan Demme Moore
at the Brooklyn Academy of Music.
It's like a small version of a more.
A re-release in a larger release soon. But this Brooklyn Academy of Music screening had actually Jonathan Demme and another producer there to answer a Q&A.
Okay, so you recommend seeing Stop Making Sense when the director is
no,
there?
No, I recommend seeing Stop Making Sense.
It's qualified.
I recommend seeing it on a big screen because this is not only...
The bigger the better. Project it on the moon.
This is not only my favorite concert film, and I think inarguably one of the best concert films ever made. It is one of my favorite movies, which was driven home seeing it on a big screen with big sound, where after every number that Talking Heads did, people would burst into applause as if the people on stage could actually hear them appreciate their music making. And
you stood up and you said, "You fools, it's on film."
Don't you see? It was like,
you're being taken for a pack of idiots. They're playing a laugh on you.
What do you think? This is like the great train robbery? That train's not going to run you down. No, but it was good. It was great. And one of the great things about Stop Making Sense is it's just a beautifully constructed stage show. It's where you really see David Byrne's background as an art student and his interest in staging.
Any giant robot zombies come out on stage?
A giant suit.
That's not
so. You're looking for more of an Iron Maiden type.
Yeah,
show?
Like an Eddie type figure.
But it's also
who they then like fight when he's on stage.
Yeah, he like lifts up Adrian Smith while he does a wicked guitar solo.
I'll wrap this up.
My least favorite part of any YouTube video of an Iron Maiden show is when the giant Eddie comes out and it's like, what is this, the Six Flags Iron Maiden show?
Whatever, dude. Shut up.
I'll wrap this up very quickly, but I do want to say that it was also there's something kind of bittersweet to watching Stop Making Sense because you really feel the joy that all of these performers are having playing music with one another, and you know how short-lived that joy is going to be and how Talking Heads are all going to end up hating each other very shortly thereafter and not play together again
not
other than...
Not do so much talking amongst themselves anymore.
From their heads.
But stop making sense. Watch it on DVD if you can't see it any other way, but see Dan it in the re-release it. If you can.
And if John of the Demi's there, go for it.
Yeah.
Ask him some questions.
I would like to recommend a movie also by a director named Demi, but not Jonathan Demi.
No, really?
Jacques Demi, director of The Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
Jacques Demi
movies.
Moore?
Brother of Jonathan Demi Moore. This is not a music film, though, that I'm going to recommend. This is one of his earliest films. I think it's his first full length, and it's called Lola. And it's from 1961, and it stars Anouk Aimée and a couple of other actors.
Now, this Lola, was she a showgirl?
She was a dancer, yeah. Okay. And she sings one song in it about her stage character, Lola. And it's a French New Wave movie that's like not one of the big major development ones, but it's a very fun, touching movie about a bunch of characters, this dancer who has a son and who is still in love with the man who left her years ago with this son, but who she doesn't expect ever to come back. An old childhood friend of hers who comes back now and has a crush on her. A single mother who has a teenage daughter who both are looking for connections with men in their own way. One out of loneliness, the other out of curiosity. And an American sailor from Chicago who is kind of in a casual relationship with Lola, but is kind of floating through his time in Paris. I don't remember if it's Paris or it's a coastal town, I think. I can't remember. But floating through his time in France and just kind of interacting with these other characters. And it's not, the characters intersect a lot, but it's not super plot heavy, but it's very fun at times and also just charming at other times and very touching at other times. And the photography in it is this beautiful kind of straightforward early 1960s black and white photography that's really crisp with a lot of great angles, and I really enjoyed it a lot. So, Lola.
So, a French New Wave movie and a movie about a New Wave band. Stuart, what do you have?
What New Wave are you doing? And it better be Surf Nazis Must Die.
The wave I'm doing. So, it's a wave of blood in a way.
Okay, that sounds scary.
So, this is a movie from 2010. It's a movie called Stakeland. It's a somewhat qualified...
I like the sound of this place. It sounds delicious.
It sounds... this is kind of a qualified recommendation. So this is...
in that I didn't like this movie.
Well, this is a movie that feels very much like a promising start to a young horror or suspense director's career. The director, Jim Mickle, just recently released a movie called Cold in July, which is based on a Joe Lansdale novel, and it's getting some good press. He also is involved in what looks like a TV series based on the Happ and Leonard series of Joe Lansdale's short stories, which is exciting. And from Stakeland, that sounds like a decent fit. It's a movie. It's basically a post-apocalyptic movie where instead of your traditional like zombie apocalypse, you have a vampire apocalypse. And it follows a young boy who also is the narrator, I guess a teenager, who travels around with a hardened vampire slayer as they go from settlement to settlement, trying to head north to New Eden, which is a promised land. And along the way, they run into religious fanatics, multiple horrible vampire situations, and other things. And there's some great stuff about, like, there's some great, you know, civilization in ruins, but hope still rises from the ashes type things. There's some great stuff with the evil religious cultists that are led by Michael,
Michael,
in an interesting, terrible, evil role.
Michael Moore.
Now, the evil vampire is played by the guy who played the lead... The lead bald guy from Fringe. What are those bald guys?
Oh, yeah, the Strangers.
The Strangers or whatever those guys.
Fringies.
Yeah, they call them Fringos.
They call them Surreys with the fringe on top.
Fringos.
And, I mean, there's a couple issues. Like, there's a climax that's a little strange and feels a little forced. And there's a little bit too much narration from the hero, who is played by the annoying younger brother from Revenge.
Of the nerds.
If only. But no, I think it's good. It's got some great little some great practical effects, and there's some genuine scary moments. So if you like vampire movies and you like post-apocalyptic stuff, I'd recommend it.
All right. So guys, it's time to get out of this sweat-filled room.
This is a very hot room that we're in.
Yeah.
Dan, mm-hmm. when did we decide to record these in the sauna at the Friars Club?
Yeah, your sleeve just slowly go up and up.
My new apartment without air conditioning. So,
well, guys, I say
you can imagine our flesh glistening.
And if we bump into each other, we'll stick for a second.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we're taking
we'll
our
peel apart.
Slowly separate.
Peel apart like some bubble tape.
Yeah, so. 6 feet of bubble gum for you, not them.
So I say, anyway. Hey guys, I had a good time. In 58 years, let's reunite and do this same podcast in Las Vegas.
Sounds good.
I thought it was Lust Vegas.
Lust Vegas, coming soon to a...
Where pleasure is paid and
pain
is pleasure.
Premium cable site. Wait, what? Hold on. Why,
yeah, because cause Pintung is the leader.
No, Pintung is not part of Lust Vegas.
His favorite playwright is Harold Pinter.
Harold Pintung. Okay. Yeah.
All right, well... This is Devolved into Chaos. For the podcast, I've been Dan McCoy.
That's been Elliot Kalin.
Over there is Stuart Wellington, and he will always be Stuart Wellington forever.
Good night, everyone.
Oh, I'm clearly Johnny Storm. Thought I was more of a Ben Grimm type, but that's okay.
No, you're more of a...
Chris Evans?
More of a slapstick.
Oh, okay. That carries over pretty well on a podcast, huh?
So, Dan, we're going to start this, or what's the...
Let's set the night on fire.
Nope.
Because we are young, you know that?